little dark. Never mind. All right. So, in the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah. But David remained in Jerusalem. One evening, David got up from his bed and walked around on the roof of the palace. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful, and David sent someone to find out about her. The man said, "She is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, and the wife of Uriah the Hittite." Then David sent messages to go get her. She came to him, and he slept with her. Then she went back home. The woman conceived and sent word to David, saying, "I am pregnant." So David sent this word to Joab, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." And Joab sent him to David. When Uriah came to him, David asked him how Joab was, how the soldiers were, and how the war was going. Then David said to Uriah, "Go down to your house and wash your feet." So Uriah left the palace, and a gift from the king was sent after him. But Uriah slept at the entrance to the palace with all his master's servants and did not go down to his house. David was told Uriah did not go home. So he asked Uriah, "Haven't you just come from a military campaign? Why didn't you go home?" Uriah said to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah are staying in tents, and my commander Joab and my lord's men are camped in the open country. How could I go to my house and eat and drink and make love to my wife? As surely as you live, I will not do such a thing." Then David said to him, "Stay here one more day, and tomorrow I will send you back." So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. At David's invitation, he ate and drank with him, and David made him drunk. But in the evening, Uriah went out to sleep on his mat among his master's servants, and he did not go home. In the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. In it, he wrote, "Put Uriah out in front where the fighting is fiercest, then withdraw from him so he will be struck down and die." Now, while Joab had the city under siege, he put Uriah at a place where he knew the strongest defenders were. When the men of the city came out and fought against Joab, some of the men in David's army fell. Moreover, Uriah the Hittite died. Joab sent David a full account of the battle. He instructed the messenger, "When you have finished giving the king this account of the battle, the king's anger may flare up, and he may ask you, 'Why did you get so close to the city to fight? Didn't you know they would shoot arrows from the wall? Who killed Abimelech, son of Jerubbaal? Didn't a woman drop an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died in Thebes? Why did you get so close to the wall?' If he asks you this, then say to him, 'Moreover, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead.'" The messenger sent out, and when he arrived, he told David everything Joab had sent him to say. The messenger said to David, "The men overpowered us and came out against us in the open, but we drove them back to the entrance of the city gate. Then the archers shot arrows at your servants from the wall, and some of the king's men died. Moreover, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead." David told the messenger, "Say this to Joab, 'Don't let this upset you. The sword devours one as well as another. Press the attack against the city and destroy it.' Say this to encourage Joab." When Uriah's wife heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. After the time of mourning was over, David had her brought to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. But the thing David had done displeased God. All right, so I'm actually going to come back to that in a few minutes, right? But title of my message today is Chasing God, as I said. And I just want to talk about a little bit about where I've been at in life recently. And move this forward a bit. And just something that's kind of been on my heart for myself, for all of us, and that is about chasing God. And I want you to do a little bit of audience stuff here. So I want you to think back to a time in your life, say when you got your first job, right? Assuming you're of working age, right? So I mean, usually it's sort of a little bit exciting at first, right? You're learning what you're doing, and you're kind of, you get paid for it, so you have some financial freedom, right? And it's usually pretty exciting at first, right? I also want you to think about your first, say, relationship with someone, right? Your first love, whatever, kind of. It's usually pretty exciting at first, isn't it? It's pretty, you know, tingly and all the kind of cool feelings that you get when you fall in love with someone, right? And I also want you to think back to when you first got to know God, right? And think back to that time when it's different for everybody. You know, for me, it was kind of a gradual thing, and just step by step, God kind of showing himself to me. And some people, it's more of a dramatic moment, or we're getting filled with the Spirit or something. But usually it's pretty intense, and it's pretty exciting, and it's pretty cool, right? So I just want you to think back for a second to those kind of times in your life where you've gone through stuff like that, and the kind of emotion that you felt from it. And I've shared my kind of story of searching before, and you know, how kind of I grew up in a Christian home, but not really knowing God, and then going away from home to college and stuff, and that's kind of where I really found God, I guess you could say. I mean, when I first moved away from home, it was really hard, and I was really lonely and homesick, and I kind of fell apart and had a major breakdown. But that was kind of the first time in my life that I really cried out to God, and when he kind of first came into my life and just started doing things in my life. And that's, it was a process more than anything, but it was really cool. And I look back on that time, and it was just really exciting. It was like I had all these questions, and I'm sort of a bit of an analytical person. You know, I like to know what I'm talking about. So I really wanted to know lots of the details and stuff, and I wasn't just going to kind of believe it because people said believe it. And but every question I had, God answered. And it wasn't just like he answered it, but he kind of led me in this direction that naturally led on to the next one, next question. And it was like a process. And by the time he'd kind of done all this, I just kind of knew. So that was kind of like my first encounter with God. And it was probably over a period of about 2 years when I was out on my own. And then that's kind of one phase of my getting to know God. And then there was sort of a second phase, because at that point I kind of knew God was real, but I didn't really know, I wasn't sure if he really cared personally about me, right? I mean, I knew he was up there doing his thing and kind of keeping the world going kind of thing, but, you know, I was still surrounded by people who had hardships and, you know, and these were believers and stuff, so I didn't really know that, I wasn't sure if he was really good or if he really cared about me personally and stuff. And that kind of brought me on to a second phase of my life where I came out here and, you know, had really no choice but to sort of trust in him, because it was just a huge upheaval in my life. You know, I'd come to a new country and, you know, new relationship, new marriage, new job, new culture, new everything, you know. So it was hard, you know, a lot of getting used to stuff. Just a funny example, you know, I work at Thermo in Rockford, and my job is tech support, right? So I work on the phones. And because I just come from England, and I don't know if you've ever been to the north of England, but the accents are really strong, right? So I picked up this kind of, I grew up in Yorkshire, which is also a fairly thick accent. Then I went up to Newcastle, where it's even worse. And then I came out here, and I had a job speaking on the phones to people. So nobody could understand a word I said, right? So I had to really kind of figure out how to talk to Americans and just slow down my speech and stuff like that. So, you know, it was interesting. So, so anyway, I mean, I had all this kind of stuff going on, and it was like God just kind of stepped in at every step there as well. And he not only showed me he was real, but he showed me he was good. And he just blessed me, really. I mean, I like to think I made some right choices, but I mean, at the same time, God was just there. And it was like, you know, when the Israelites were wandering around in the wilderness and they were following the cloud and the pillar of fire, and it was like you knew where to go. And it was almost like God was just like that pillar of fire in the cloud, and you could just see where to go. And it was like he was this close to me. And so, you know, I really look back on that time, and it was, even though it was hard, it was awesome, because I just felt so close to God. And, you know, I like to think that, you know, like I said, when we all think back to times like that in our lives, whether it's a new job, a new relationship, and, you know, our faith, we look back on it, I think, with a time of, you know, with fond memories, right, usually. I mean, it's sort of exciting, you're learning new stuff, and there's no horizon. The horizon is miles away. You could just go, sort of go anywhere, you know, wherever you want to go, and it's exciting. And then, you know, I'm 41 now, and kind of, you know, getting on a bit more, and things have kind of changed in my life, you know. So it was like 15 years ago when I came out to America, and, you know, obviously things have changed a bit now. I'm settled, I'm married. You know, stable job, thank goodness, and stable relationships, you know, life is more of a routine, right? So I go to work, same shift every day, pretty much do the same job every day, just different questions, and come home, and, you know, I've got family commitments, and, you know, hanging out with the kids, take them to the park, whatever. And don't get me wrong, life is good. I like my life, but it's changed. It's more stable. It's more... it's less exciting, you could say. I'm not making the breakthroughs that I once was. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, you know, God, I feel, has blessed me, and I'm cool with that. I'm in no way disappointed with it. But I do kind of still miss that that feeling of excitement I got earlier in my life, you know. And I think, you know, I mean, if you think back to the first time you got your job and your relationships and your faith and stuff, I don't wonder if any of you have noticed the same. I mean, my job, I've kind of gotten used to it now. I know what I'm doing with supporting the products that we make. You know, my relationship with Esther is, you know, it's just changed from being kind of really exciting at first, that first kind of love kind of feeling that you get. And it's changed to a kind of a more deeper thing now. And it's not necessarily good or bad, it's just changed. But still, it's missing that kind of excitement of the earlier stages. And it's the same with my faith, too, to be quite honest. You know, back when I was going through this kind of stuff, finding God, God just showing himself to me and taking me along this path, it was almost like, it's like he was right there, and all I had to do was follow the cloud or the pillar of fire or whatever, you know what I mean? But now I can't really see that cloud so well. I can't see the fire so well. And it's like, it's not like I feel God has pulled away or is any less of God, you know, but it's almost like he's calling me to a place where I got to go find him. Do you know what I mean? And it's different. I just wondered if anybody else kind of felt the same thing, you know, especially as you get older, it changes, doesn't it? And it's, to be quite honest, I mean, I went through a phase a couple of years ago where I was kind of learning a lot more about God and kind of the supernatural kind of stuff. And I went through this experience where I got filled with the Spirit at night. And that was a cool experience too. And it was like God was showing me I'm on the right path. But I'll be quite honest, since that time, and this is probably me more than anything, but maybe I haven't fully stepped into that in the way I want to do it. You know, I'm a bit of an introvert at my heart. You know, I'm not really an extrovert, and I don't particularly feel comfortable with just going up and talking to strangers on the street and stuff like that. I don't know if many of us do. I know there are some people who do, but for me personally, I'm just not as comfortable doing that. I mean, I'll try. Doesn't mean I'm using it as an excuse not to try, right? But it's just not quite as natural for me. And I'd always kind of seen it. What I would really love to do is, like, you know, kind of apply my job. You know, I've got in my job people call me and ask me questions, and I can hopefully help them, right? And I'd always dreamed of kind of like setting something like that up with my faith, you know, where people are coming to you for help. And you know, I've talked to various people about doing that, and hopefully something will come of it. But people here, and hopefully something will come of it. I still kind of feel like I'm stagnating a bit, right? And you know, it's kind of the same in your marriage too. I mean, you know, if you don't, you've got all these feelings at first, and you love being around the other person. And if you're not careful, I mean, as I said with Esther, you know, things can change a little bit, and we're not kind of at that same place anymore. And it's not like we're in trouble or anything, but maybe we're just having to work a little harder at what we do, you know. And you know, we've sort of stabilized a bit, and our relationship has gone from being the kind of exciting phase to the more kind of stable phase where we like being with each other, we're comfortable with each other, but we're maybe not making the kind of exciting discoveries about each other that we were when we were first married and stuff, you know. So, you know, all these different things in life, your job, your relationships, your faith, I think they all kind of go through similar cycles, you know what I mean? And it's at this point where they sort of stabilize and maybe plateau out a bit, I think that we're, you know, if we don't kind of recognize that and work on it, there's a danger that things can decline, right? You know, I mean, you go to work, you do your job, it just becomes mundane. You know, maybe you don't like your colleagues, your boss, whatever, and you could take an attitude to work with you. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that's necessarily your fault, but I mean, you might have a sucky situation at work, and that's not your fault. But it just shows how things can change if you're not careful. In relationships, you know, you can get, even if it's just a friendship, you know, you can get bored with the person, you can let it fizzle if you're not careful. You know, relationships with your spouse, you know, if you don't make a point of spending time with the person, of doing stuff with the person, just doing those little things that mean a lot to that person, then it can start to fizzle. And, you know, if it does and you don't address it, it can actually go really dangerous places, you know. And it's the same thing in our faith. Right, we can get comfortable with that. We can be satisfied with the blessings that God gives us at first, right? And we can just kind of take it for granted if we're not careful. If we don't address this slowdown period or this changing period, it can start to get like you're drifting, you know, and I know people who have been gung-ho for the Lord at first, and they've come up and up and gone great places, and then maybe there's been some kind of disappointment in their life or whatever, but things have started they've really started to struggle, and it starts out slow at first, you know, it starts out like, well, maybe God doesn't care for me in this matter or other matters, and, you know, maybe it cycles, maybe it snowballs, maybe it even gets to the point where they doubt even his existence. I mean, I don't know about you, but I did, it wasn't so much for me personally, but I know a lot of people had this great experience when they first came to know the Lord, and God just showed up and did this real miracle in their heart, whatever. And I know people who have gone through crazy experiences like that, but for whatever reason, they've struggled in life, and now it's to the point where they're actually convincing themselves that they imagined that. You know what I mean? If we don't address this slowdown, this change in our circumstances, then, you know, it's a dangerous point. And I feel that when we get to this sort of stabilizing point, this change, this slowdown, and whatever it is, I feel we have a choice to make. And I'm just going to stick my neck out here. I think it's the second most important choice you will ever make. Right? The most important choice you'll ever make is for the Lord, right? That first point of salvation where you're going about your business, your life, whatever, and all of a sudden you hear the call of the Lord and you stop doing whatever you want and then you start going towards the voice, right? That is the point of salvation to me. And that is the most important decision you will ever make. But I think the second most important decision you will ever make is when things change. It's when God, I'm not saying he pulls away, but I mean, he's everywhere. He's always accessible. But I think sometimes he can just kind of move the pillar of fire, the cloud, a little further away. And he's not just doing it to, like, be mean. He's just calling us to a different place. And he's calling us to go after him, right? And it's like at first when you come to know the Lord, it's like he's guiding you every step. And it's like he's in control. He's making circumstances for you, and you just sort of step into those circumstances. And it's like, for me personally, it was just like he was just doing it all. And I was like a passenger. All I had to do was follow the cloud. What I'm finding now is I got to go find the cloud, right? And I just want to, like, emphasize the importance of that, because I think if we don't go follow the cloud, it's a dangerous place to be, and it can lead to this downward spiral if we're not careful. And I'm pretty sure, I mean, it applies to, like, all aspects of life, not just your faith, but your faith is the most important. And I just want to encourage anybody here that's maybe at that place. I'm pretty sure all of the older ones here have gone through this kind of different change of pace in life, and things have slowed down and whatnot, and you know, you're faced with this choice. Maybe your marriage is slowing down, maybe it's changing, you know, the relationship. If we don't do those little things that mean so much to the other person, it can start to spiral, right? And I'm just going to call this section "What If," right? But I mean, what if we take this choice at this point, when we get to this point in life, say in our job, what if we choose to go into there with a good attitude and invest in our job and the people around us, even if they suck, right? Even if the boss is just like mean and whatever, and our colleagues are, you know, abusing their, you know, jobs and whatever. What if we just choose to go in there, and never mind what everybody else is doing, I'm just going to honor the Lord and do my job as the best I can do it. In relationships, right? I mean, what if we just choose to invest in relationships? What if the friend that we haven't seen in months or years, choose to call them up and just, hey, do you want to go out for coffee, whatever, you know? I mean, Facebook's a wonderful thing. I'm not saying Facebook's bad or anything like that, but we do tend to sort of just limit our interactions to kind of clicking on a phone these days, you know? And what if we just chose to kind of step outside that realm and just go be with the person, you know? In your marriage, in your relationships, what if, I don't know if you're like me, but and Esther, but I mean, I kind of got a list of things that I love about Esther. I also got a list of things I don't really like about Esther, to be quite honest. And she's got the same list about me, right? Different things on it, but she's still got her own list, right? I like to think that the good list is a lot longer than the short, you know, the bad list. But but what if we choose to meet the needs in our spouse, even if they don't meet the needs in ours, in our lives, you know? What if we can just take that initiative and just do it anyway, even if our own needs are not being met by them? Okay? I mean, I know there are circumstances where the other person just isn't trying or whatever, and I know there are people here who've probably gone through relationships that haven't made it, and you know, it's not always your fault. But I mean, what if we could get to the point, even if that happens, where we just say, I did absolutely everything I could do, right? And it didn't work, and that's okay, you know? What if we could get to the point where we give them, give our spouse or significant other what they need instead of what we think they need? You know, it's a different, totally different mentality than just sort of always focusing on yourself. And I'm as guilty as anybody. I mean, I've been through phases like that where it's just been like that. And you know, me and Esther have both been through phases like that. And we've had times where we're doing great and times where we've had fights and stuff. But we have recognized that point in our life and the relationship has changed. And we're addressing it. And we're trying to come through that period, you know. And I like to think that we're working it out. You know, in our faith, I mean, if you feel that you're at this point where you're maybe drifting, that you're not as close to God as you once were, that maybe the pillar is not quite in front of you as much as it was before, we got to take some steps, I think, to address that, I think. And it's going to be different for everybody. You know, for me personally, it's just been trying to get more involved in stuff. You know, I figure the more I do stuff, I'm not saying do stuff out of guilt or for the wrong reasons, right? But I am saying that if you have a tendency to just want to kind of be by yourself or whatever and watch TV and stuff and just sort of not go after God with everything, that can be me if I'm not careful, right? And I'm trying to take steps to like get more involved in stuff and serve and do whatever it needs to be, you know? I don't know if you remember Dan Mysek, who they came here for a little while, and they're beloved now, but I mean, Dan is like a machine, right? He's just an amazing guy. He's got the gift of the gab, so he knows how to talk to people, but not only that, he just gets involved in everything out there, and even not just at his church, I mean, he helps out with the police, he does stuff at work, praying for people, you know, he gets involved with volunteer stuff, and he just gets involved in everything. And it presents opportunities where he can minister to people. And he's kind of like almost like my role model, actually. I mean, I know he's just my age, but just the mentality he has of just going after opportunities and working with people and just God brings people to him, you know? And I kind of want to be like that. And I'm working at it, you know, and I'm doing my best to get involved in stuff, you know. But whatever it takes for you to do that, you know, I would just encourage you to go after it, because if you stagnate, I think it's a dangerous place to be. You face this choice. You either stagnate and stay there, maybe have some ups and downs going towards God, away from God. But I mean, if you don't recognize the danger, then I would just encourage you to do everything you can just to go after God. And not out of guilt or no bad motive, but just to get closer to it. And, you know, I mean, I think we can do it personally and we can do it corporately. You know, I mean, I think at Eastgate we're pretty good on the experiential side. I mean, we have amazing worship, you know, and stuff. And I think, I like to think that God just shows up when we do that. You know, I mean, I've had times where you can just feel the presence of God in the room, right? I mean, you know, and I can say from being a worship leader, you know, it's kind of weird because there are times you're up there and it just feels like you're struggling. And then, and no matter what you do, and maybe the band's not quite syncing with you or whatever, and maybe you kind of, just people are not getting into it or whatever, but then there's other times when you're doing it, and it's like, you don't even have to try, right? God's just there, and it's like, the band's just working with each other, and people are getting into it, and it's like, those moments, I love those moments, and I, you know, for me personally, I'm just going to say this, right, but I mean, I know that my style of worship is maybe a little different to like Lanier and Michael and that, and I'll be quite honest, you know, when Annie McCaffrey came out and said a comment about, you know, the worship, I was a little bit hurt by that, and I talked to her after it, and she actually apologized and said, you know, should have said that privately instead of publicly, but at the same time, I'm not going to use that as an excuse, because at the end of the day, she was right, right, you know, and I'm working on, like, improving myself as a worship leader, and I'm trying to get more free, and you may hear me do some experimenting. I'm not a natural at it, but you know, I'm doing my best, and I'll hopefully get to that place where I'm sort of more free with it. But I just want to say, you know, I mean, I think at Eastgate we're pretty good on the experiential side of it, and but I don't know that we all have maybe the Bible knowledge that we need. You know, I mean, Bible knowledge is great, I mean, and it's a balance between the two. You can't just have experience and no Bible knowledge, right? But you can, likewise, you can't just have the Bible knowledge without the experience. It's a balance. But I mean, if you feel personally like, you know, you maybe need some more Bible knowledge, I would just encourage you to get to read the Bible. I mean, it's not anything crazy. I mean, I would just say that there's some really cool parts of the Bible. I mean, it's all cool, but there are some special parts, like in the Old Testament. I mean, I love reading about like when God spoke directly to people, like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Joshua, David, just to name but a few. You know, there's some parts of the Bible that are just, you get a real insight into the character of God when you're, you know, you read about how he interacts with these people, and it's amazing stuff, and it really helps you in your own life, I feel, to make good decisions, to know more about where God is leading you. So if at all you feel that way, like you feel you need more to know more about that kind of God, that side of God, I would really encourage you just to read your Bible, and don't let it be this big book that's kind of crazy, but just ask people, where are the best parts to read? I would really encourage you to do that. You know, I read the thing about King David up there initially, right? And I think that if you look at the previous stories about King David, you know, it goes through all this kind of time when he was a boy and he was serving the Lord as a watching sheep, and then goes through his whole experience with Goliath and stuff, and battles with Saul, and eventually he becomes king. But it's really fascinating to look at it, because God just sort of guides him at every step, and he takes right decisions, but you know, at the end of the day, he becomes king, and God blesses him. But, I mean, it says, like, the very start of that scripture, it says, in the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. Right? Now, I don't know whether that's what he was supposed to do or not supposed to do, but it makes a point of saying that he remained in Jerusalem, like it was something different to maybe normal. It says it's a time when kings go off to war, so, I mean, obviously he wasn't doing that. So what does he do? I mean, he stays in Jerusalem, and then he sees Bathsheba, and he gets into trouble, right? I like to think that maybe he was at that point where he had this choice to make, right? And unfortunately for David, he kind of screwed up and blew it. But afterwards, I don't have the scripture, but I mean, it does say that Nathan came along and convinced him that he was wrong, kind of thing, and told him the story about the lambs and the sheep and stuff. But David repented. I mean, he knew he was wrong. He repented. And God lifted him up, and he restored him. And so it wasn't a permanent thing. And if you look forward to when Jesus came along, I mean, David was so honored in God's eyes that Jesus was actually known as the son of David. You know, I mean, that's a pretty good honor to have, right? So I just want to finish up by encouraging you to make, if you feel that you're at any of these places where you're stagnating, just to make the choice and make a conscious decision just to go after God. And do whatever it takes for you to get there. I just want to finish up with some scriptures, if you could put them up, Chris. These are just a sort of a collection of scriptures that are talking about some of this stuff, right? I'm just going to read them. This is in Acts. From one man he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us, for in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. This is in Jeremiah. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will hear you. You will seek me and find me, and when you seek me with all your heart, I will be found by you, declares the Lord. And I will restore your fortunes and gather you from the nations. It's in Matthew. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon the house. But it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and that was, and great was the fall of it. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it. Once again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down into the lake and caught all kinds of fish. When it was full, the fishermen pulled it up on the shore. Then they sat down and collected the good fish in the baskets and threw the bad away. Ask and it shall be given you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asks shall receive, and he that seeks will find. And to him that knocks it shall be opened. Seek first the kingdom of righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of it as its own. That's the last one. So just a few scriptures there. I feel that, you know, when we do make this decision to go after God, whether it's at the start or in the middle or whenever, God will honor that. And he'll show up and be there for us. So I just want to finish in prayer. Lord, I just thank you for this message. I hope it's what you wanted to say to people, and I hope I've delivered it okay. But Lord, I just want to thank you for all your goodness. And I just want to pray for my friends here, Lord, that if anybody is in this situation where they feel that you're not as close as you once were, Lord, that we would just do whatever it takes to go after you. However that is, it's going to be different for everybody. But I just pray we have the courage to do it, Lord. And as we take those baby steps, that you would just show us that we're going in the right direction, Lord. And help us have discernment to know it's you. Just thank you, Lord, in Jesus' name.